You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com. Have you ever wondered what it's like inside a screenwriter's mind? In this podcast, we explore how successful screenwriters tackle structure, plot, character, dialogue, and the film business. Get ready to go down the rabbit hole of story as we pull the best interviews from the archives of the IFH Podcast Network. Let's travel inside the screenwriter's mind. This episode originally aired on the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast.
Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Today's episode, we're going to go deep into the dark world of television writing. How to break in, what happens inside, the politics of what happens inside. From a point of view of a writer, last episode we talked about with Daniel Knopf, who is a showrunner, and that I want to talk to him about it from his point of view. But now we're going to talk about it from a writer's point of view. Someone who worked their way in, was a writer's assistant, and did everything they had to do to get in and see how the inner workings of a network show actually is, till he finally got a shot to write a full episode of the series. And so today's guest is Steve Vitolo. And Steve has been a writer's assistant, a script coordinator, and also a writer on some big shows like Hot in Cleveland, Crowded, and Blackish. And I wanted to have Steve on the show to kind of get his perspective on what it's really like to break into a writer's room, to get on a show, and really, you know, make some noise as a writer. And there's so much craziness that happens with revisions against revisions and other things that happen while you're in the writing process, that he actually created a software that helps writers in the massive amounts of revisions in television. And it's called Scriptation. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Steven Vitolo. I'd like to welcome to the show Steve Vitolo. How are you doing, brother?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man, for coming on board. I don't know much about the television world and television writing world.
Oh, happy to fill you in.
So that's why you are on the show.
All I know.
Sir. That's exactly. So I'm dying to hear about all the inner workings of network shows and writers' rooms and all that kind of good stuff. But first of all, how did you get into the film business?
Well, I went to Boston University and graduated College of Communication, did a film and TV degree, so did that whole thing. And as far as the actual degree,
how useful is it?
Not at all.
Has anyone ever asked you in this industry to show you
that? No one's like, oh, here's where it does help. It helps in the connections that you make while you're there. So, for example, before I moved out to Los Angeles, I stayed at home for a year just to save money so I could move out to Los Angeles to eventually blow that all in like 3 to 6 months.
Obviously.
But where it really helped is that there was a contingency of people that moved out right after college. and they all got the crappy jobs that no one wanted to get. So they were all PAs and interns and things like that. So there was such a big network at BU of current people and also alumni. So that's where it really helps you. But no one's looking at your GPA for a film job and seeing what school you went to. Although maybe if you're a Harvard graduate, that you know, you kind of have a leg up anywhere in any industry.
But, really? Yeah. Do you think Harvard Film School really going to open the doors too much?
Well, it does in certain writers' rooms for sure.
Oh, no. In writers' room, I actually saw that documentary about the Harvard Lampoon and those guys. It's almost like a club, a fraternity. If you're in the Lampoon, you automatically cut the line in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that is true. I'm not all the time, but they have a big leg up and they'll get meetings and they'll get signed and things like that. So if you're going to go to Harvard, you should put that on your resume.
No, I mean, I went to Full Sail Film School in Orlando, and not once has anyone ever asked me in the entire time I've been doing this, can I see your degree?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you hope you get good training and you're able to do what you want to do. I mean, I think if you're going to film school, you probably have an idea. I don't think anyone goes to film school is like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But usually when you go there, it's like, okay, I want to direct, I want to write, I want to produce, or maybe you want to do all those things. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you get the training at the school to do that. And then, you know, when you move out, some of your friends or schoolmates will be there helping you, and then it's a connections game.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is.
And a talent game, hopefully.
The talent is – it's unfortunately sometimes it's still like the lower on the totem pole sometimes. But a lot of times it's like those connections do get you in the door, but you have to stay in the door.
Exactly.
And that's where the talent and experience and things come in and play.
You also have to get your foot in the right door. Mm-hmm. When I moved out here, I was, you know, I'd take any job. So mm-hmm. I started in reality television and award shows. My very first PA job was on Jamie Kennedy's show. Mm-hmm. It was called Blowing Up.
Yeah. I love the way you said that. It's like, it's called Blowing Up.
I know. Sell it. I think it was on MTV. I have a really bad memory, but I think it was an MTV show. And I remember the first day I was there, my job was to hold an umbrella because we were outside. So my job was to hold an umbrella over Jamie Kennedy so he wouldn't get sunburned.
Nice. You were close to the star, so that's not bad.
I know. And that was the glamorous. It's funny. I got that job. It was like my second day there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my friend at college was like, hey, you want to be a PA for this thing? And it's like, great, glamorous everything. And then, that's my job.
So from there, how do you parlay that into the next stages of your career?
So I kind of was a PA for a while, and I was working in reality and live event shows. I eventually, because I did a couple of, you know, PA jobs like here and there just for a couple days, because I didn't really have like a full-time PA job. It's like take a gig here, take a commercial there, that sort of thing. I eventually got on the Academy Awards as a PA.
Nice. See, I would have killed for a job like that coming up. I would have killed for that.
It was a great experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like they prep 3 to 4 months before. It's crazy how long they prep for this show. I had no idea. So I was just, and when you're a PA on that show for the production office, and there are so many different departments that don't have their own PAs, you're doing everything for everyone. So you're really, you know, an errand person for that. And so that was my first, you know, quote unquote steady PA job, which was like 3 or 4 months.
Nice.
And I actually kind of went back to that the next year and the year after, just because it worked out that I wasn't working at the time, because that's the life, right?
Of course.
So eventually, because I had that experience and because it was, you know, you're involved in so many different departments, and it's kind of a harder PA job than most, I would think. I mean, I haven't had that many, but it seemed like it. I was able to get a PA job on the pilot for The Middle, mm-hmm. which I wanted to get. I wanted to be a TV writer. So I wanted to get in scripted TV, and a friend of mine who had moved on from PAing found their job opening and referred me, and I was able to get that job. And it was actually not the middle show that was on for 9 years or wherever it was on with Patricia Heaton. Mm. It originally starred Ricky Lake.
Wow.
Yes, I was on that one. I think that was 2007. It starred Ricky Lake and a bunch of other actors, and it didn't get picked up. It went through a redevelopment. They got Patricia Heaton, I think, in 2009, and then it got picked up and it went. But yeah, not many people know that it was not in its current form.
Interesting.
Yeah, the script was actually pretty much the same, but I mean, actors, man, you get Patricia Heaton, and you're probably going to go a little while
off and running.
Yeah, you're off and running.
And what were you doing? What were you doing? And you're just being PA still?
Yeah, I was an office PA.
Okay.
And I was able to parlay that, you know, very luckily into a writer's PA job, which was, you know, people are dying to get into the writer's office. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky to get in there. Actually, my production coordinator was letting the PAs go by picking names out of a hat because she couldn't decide who to let go. And my name, of course, was the first name to get picked out of a hat. Mm-hmm. So like I was, because on a pilot, you know, you're only working a certain period of time, and then it, you know, pickups and all that stuff. So I was let go first. My production coordinator said, oh, I feel so bad, because I was also like brought on last. So I had like the shortest amount of time. Mm-hmm. And she's like, but I'll find something for you. And I'm like, okay, sure. and then, you know, a day later, she got me an interview as a writer's PA on Hannah Montana.
Nice.
And the next day I was hired. And that was really a crazy whirlwind. And I was finally, after a few years, in the writer's office, which you just want to get your foot in the door there to be with those people. And it was a great show, a great experience.
So then tell me, what is it like being in the writer's room, in the writer's department of a network show?
Well, you mean as opposed to something that's are you saying as opposed to cable or just like
I know you're being specific about network or TV, but like I know Hannah Montana was cable, but right. You've worked on network shows as well. I'm assuming right. They're not very different.
Yeah, they're the same, especially
right.
Now streaming services.
How many scripted shows are there now? 250? 300?
Double that.
Oh, is it really that much now? Like 500 or 600?
I believe it's over 600 now.
Oh my God, that's insane.
And I think that's just US. I mean, Netflix, I mean, you turn on Netflix and every week there's something new that they've spent $25 million on.
And Amazon too.
And you've had no idea, you've never heard of it.
Right.
And like,
and it has this star in it? Like what?
It has a star in it. And like, you must've skipped the trades that day. And it's like, oh, so they just made the show for like $25 million. I mean, they're going to put it on.
I literally was just watching. I was on YouTube the other day and I saw this trailer for like The Outlaw King starring Chris Pine. And it's like this Braveheart style epic on Netflix. I'm like, I've never even heard of this. It's about Bruce, something the Bruce, who's a Scottish guy. And it's basically Braveheart again, but wow. Different. And I'm like,
10 episodes production.
No. This is not a show. This is a movie. But there's shows like that come out all the time, too. Like, who's this? How did this happen? Where did this come from? It's constant all the time. So it doesn't surprise me that 600 episodes or 600 shows are being scripted right now. So it's a good time to be trying to get into the writer's room.
It's a good time to be working in the industry for sure. Mm-hmm. There's definitely more opportunities. When I first started working, there was a certain cycle where you had pilot season, then you didn't work, and then shows picked up. And if it was canceled – which after Hannah Montana, I went to a show called Do Not Disturb. Mm-hmm. You probably haven't heard of it because it was the first show canceled that season.
Of course.
We filmed 6 episodes. We aired 3, and I live in Culver City, and it was at Fox, and it was like a dream for me. I don't have to travel into Hollywood to work, mm-hmm. and I'm like, this is going to be great. I'm going to bike to work. And then 2 months later,
bye-bye.
Yeah.
Is there still a pilot season? I mean, there's some sort of pilot season now, like it starts in January, right?
Yeah, for network's still doing the pilot season. It starts around January. Sometimes early pilots can go like November, December, but basically like January, February, March, you shoot the pilots and then pick up. So yeah, there's still that in network, but with Netflix, they're not doing pilots. So they go straight to series. And with cable, because when I first started, cable wasn't what it was either. Right. Now there are so many shows on cable there's no set seasonal thing for that. There are shows popping up all the time. So there's definitely more opportunity now than there was, 10 years ago.
So what is it like to be in a writer's room in any kind of show?
Yeah, fantastic. It's fantastic if you have nice writers and funny writers and your boss is great. And I've been very lucky in that I've had great bosses. Mm-hmm. So I worked on Blackish most recently, and Kenya Barris created the show, and he's just so brilliant. He'll just come in the room and just, sort of Jedi mind everything into what the story needs to be. And, a writer that has a clear voice is refreshing because you know exactly what he wants. And also Corey Nickerson ran the room, mm-hmm. and she's able to address notes and just the way she can craft a scene and get us through the script, make it great and funny and get us out of there so we're not working till 2 and 3 in the morning is a real talent, and everybody loves her for that. So if you're working in a writer's room like that, it's great. I've worked on some show. When you work on a show that's a first season multi-camera show, for example, there's a lot. First of all, the multi-camera schedule is not great for writers. It's fantastic for actors, but for writers, actors are often rehearsing at 2, 3, sometimes 4. And then after that rehearsal in the writer's room, you go back and you rewrite the entire script. So you're starting the rewrite at 4 or 5. And it's not just your notes, but it's network and studio notes that you have to address. If something's really not working, it could be a problem. If it's a first season show, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny. Mm-hmm. So that you can start working till, 1 or 2 in the morning. But, luckily, I haven't had that experience too much, and I've worked for great people like Kenya and Corey. Suzanne Martin, I worked with. She created Hot in Cleveland, mm-hmm. and a show called Crowded. Victor Fresco, who I worked on for Man Up and Sean Saves the World, and now he's got Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix. He's just a great guy, fantastic person, nicest boss you could have. So yeah, being in the room is great if people in the room are great.
So what are like the politics of the room? Like you say, the showrunner, the executive producer pretty much is in charge, right?
Right.
And then there is someone who is in charge of the room underneath them, kind of like
sometimes, or sometimes not. It depends on the show. Usually on a multicam show, because of the way it's structured, mm-hmm. the showrunner is running the room, because as writers on a multicamera show, you do everything together. So you go down to the set together, you watch rehearsals together, you come back together. So the person who created the show, usually the showrunner is running every aspect of it. If you work on a single camera show, because it's shot like a movie, sometimes that person will be on set. Sometimes. Mm-hmm. It depends how it's structured. And then there's a number 2. So kind of the, there's no like real title, but.
Sure.
Head writer, basically, kind of idea.
Got it.
And that person will be running the room. And then what happens is then the showrunner will come back to the room if they've been on set. And then we'll review everything that we've done in the room. Kind of how it works.
Now, how are ideas incorporated in an episode in the writer's room? Like, are people throwing out ideas? Do people go away, write an episode, come back, and then get it beat up? How does it work?
Yeah, it's different. There's no one way to do it. But in general, everyone breaks a story together. That's how it's done, I would say, for 90-something percent of writer's rooms, mm-hmm. is that either someone comes in with a story or we just start pitching around funny I work in comedy. So we just start pitching around funny ideas or something that happened and if we could build a story around it. But everybody, for the most part, is sitting around a table breaking the story together. And it's done in stages. First, it's, you know, a rough outline or some notes, and then you make a more complete outline. And then on Blackish, for example, we would all come up with the story together. We would have on whiteboards, we would write the scene, what happens in the scene, any jokes that we like. And it would be, you know, two boards full of the story, or sometimes three. Mm-hmm. And then we would give that to the writer, and the writer would turn that into an outline. The outline would be reviewed by the showrunner or some of the writers and the studio and the network. They would get notes. They would write a draft. And that draft then comes into – before it goes anywhere, the writer's draft comes into the writer's room. So it gets distributed to all the writers. The writers read it, make notes, and then we talk about the draft, and then we make changes in the room. So that's generally how it's done. That's not like a hard and fast rule. I've worked on shows, for example, Crowded and Hot in Cleveland. We did it a little differently where we broke the story together and then we each took scenes. So all the writers would go home and they would write a scene and then send it to the script coordinator, which was me. And I would put all the scenes together in a script, send it back out to everybody. Everybody would read it. And then we discuss in the room. So that's how it's done sometimes too. And on Hannah Montana, stop me if I'm being boring.
No, I think everyone listening, everybody listening wants to hear this stuff. So please continue.
And on Hannah Montana, it was all room written. So, And I think that's the way it works on Chuck Lorre shows. I've never been on one. But where everybody writes in the room and then it's assigned to a writer afterwards.
Okay, so everyone beats the story down or breaks the story, outlines it, and then they give it to one writer to like go write the script.
No, not for that one. Mm-hmm. For Hannah Montana and the Chuck Lorre shows, once you break the story, mm-hmm. then the writer's assistant opens up a blank document in the room and people are literally dictating the script. So it all gets written to get with everyone together in the writer's room.
That must be insane, though.
Kind of. I mean, it works. I've seen it work on certain shows. It doesn't work on other shows. Like, I don't think that would work on Blackish because that show needs a point of view.
Yes,
and and it needs a writer to sit with the material and really think through the story and the scenes. But on a multi-camera show, for example, when you're going beat by beat by beat, that's something that maybe isn't necessary. So it works much better, at least, than a multi-camera to be room written.
Got it. Now, you mentioned you were a script coordinator. Can you tell the audience what a script coordinator on a television network show does?
Yes, and I'm so glad you said script coordinator and not script supervisor because
completely different things.
That gets confused 9 out of 10 times.
So tell the difference between a script supervisor and script coordinator.
Sure. So a script supervisor and script supervisors, forgive me if I'm messing this up, but they are they're on set. They deal with continuity. They work with the director. They deal with timing, and they make notes and give it to the editor. So they're on set. They're really important. They're with the director and the writer and making sure they get all the shots and things like that. So that's what a script supervisor does. A script coordinator is not on the set. A script coordinator is and it's kind of different comedy and drama. But the main job of the script coordinator is to be the liaison between the writer's office and the production. So your job is to get the script in production shape. So scene numbers, scene headings. You deal with legal and clearance issues. So once a script gets distributed, it goes to the clearance department and legal, and they'll say what you can and what you can't say. And also when I say the liaison, you are also dealing with the departments and helping them with clearances as well. So art departments, they'll say, hey, we need a sign for this thing. Can you clear these five names? So that's a job as a script coordinator. On a drama, that's mostly what they do. Their script coordinators are in an office. They get so many revisions on a drama that that's kind of their whole job is to work, you know, in the script in that way. On a comedy, a lot of times, and has been my experience always, script coordinators also act as a writer's assistant. Mm-hmm. So they are in the room working in the script, or taking notes when people are outlining or things like that.
So what does a writer's assistant do then?
Writer's assistant is responsible for taking notes. Mm-hmm. Doing some research, maybe working in the script for rewrites. So once a writer brings in a script and we all talk about it, the writer's assistant will take the notes that we've just talked about, and then once we go back into the script and room write it together to do a pass, the writer's assistant will work in the script changing the text. So you need typing skills for that, and you need knowledge of script writing software to be able to hop around in the script. And it's not so easy. It's something that you definitely get the hang of, and it's a skill, knowing who to listen to, because you get a lot of voices coming at you. Mm-hmm. So being able to get all the pitches down and know which ones the showrunner wants and kind of who to listen to in the writer's room and who to definitely get, that's a writer's assistant skill.
Now you've been going through all of this. You've been a script coordinator, you're a writer's assistant, and done all this kind of really heavy lifting throughout your career. And then all of a sudden they point to you and say, you're going to get to write an episode. What was that like?
Amazing.
And that's the end of the show. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's worked out different on different shows. That happened on Blackish, where I was there for like a year and a half. I didn't expect to get a script my first season, but the second season, it was one of those shows where you don't have to ask for it, because that's been the culture of the show, where they'll give scripts to the writer's assistants if they think the writer's assistant or script coordinator is good. Mm-hmm. And on Blackish, I had heard rumors around it, and then they made an announcement in the room. And when you're an assistant, the writers applaud for you. So that happened. That also happened on Hot in Cleveland, where they made an announcement in the room, which was super great. And then on Crowded, I had worked with Suzanne Martin on Hot in Cleveland. So when I was hired as a script coordinator on the new show, she was kind enough to let me write a script for the show as part of being a script coordinator. It's a great feeling. And the great thing about Blackish, and sort of the humbling thing, is that I was writing it with the writer's assistant on the show, and it was the finale of the season. And it was
a good episode. That's a good episode. I remember
it is. And it was a tough one. It was last episode of a 4-episode arc where the characters were getting separated and were coming back together.
Yes. It was a brutal arc. It was brutal to watch.
Brutal is the perfect word. It was brutal. And it was necessary, and people didn't really like it.
Did not like it. I'm going to be honest with you. My wife and I are going, they're going too far. They need to stop this. I have enough troubles in my world. I don't need this.
Yeah, I know. That was a lot of the feedback on the Twitter sphere.
But it's bold. It was bold.
And Kenya really wanted to show that, because they never showed that thing, you know, that kind of thing on the Cosby Show. And he felt it was kind of, you know, that's life. You know, you kind of go through these ups and downs.
Yep.
And But yeah, we were tasked, me and the writer's assistant, writing the finale. And it was one of those things, too, where it was obviously an important episode. They're getting back together, which is great. But also, it was at the end of the season. So, like, we've done 24 episodes, and, like, everyone's burnt out. Mm-hmm. So when we got the outline, me and the writer assistant, we had some room to play with. Because we knew the story we wanted to tell, and we had the outline. And then, like, we noticed, like, okay, like, Act 3 isn't as broken, and there's no tag. It's kind of up to us, so we can play a little bit.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show.
And, look, a lot of times when you get outlines in writers' rooms, it's like paint by numbers. Mm-hmm. And this, we actually had some room to do some things. And luckily, we succeeded on most of them. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a major rewrite coming in. And our tag, I'm happy to say, went all the way through. Mm-hmm. Shockingly, it was, I don't know if you remember the tag, but it was Pops and Ruby in the shared home that Dre was no longer there anymore. And mm-hmm. they thought they should get it on.
Yes. I do remember that. Yes.
Yeah. So that was, we were so happy that sailed through, because a lot of times when you bring a script in, stuff gets changed. That's the nature of the beast. And it's 99% going to get changed for the better. It's better when you have, 10, 15 writers that are smarter than you saying, here's how we can improve. So yeah, when something sneaks past the goalie and they're like, yeah, okay, we'll go with this. That was pretty cool.
Now, what does it do for your career working on a show like Black-ish and such a pivotal episode as well? I mean, has it opened doors that weren't open before?
No, not really.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, maybe in the future. I mean, it's a good credit for sure.
Sure.
And as far as, Writers Guild residual goes, it's going to be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because it's a syndicated show and it reruns. And so,
that'd
but
nice.
Yeah, as far as like agents, managers knocking on my door, not so much. Doesn't really happen. You would think.
Well, that I wanted to kind of bring that up because I want to make sure everyone listening knows the truth. Of what happens.
They
know the truth. All of a sudden, like, you, most people are like, oh, you just wrote the season finale for Black-ish, a huge show on ABC. They must be just rolling up to your door with cash waiting for you for your, like, what show would you like to run, sir?
Yeah, exactly. No, it doesn't really work like that. Unfortunately, and I was the most naive person coming out to Los Angeles. So I would have totally my idea was, hey, I'm going to write a script for Two and a Half Men and show it to the showrunner, and he's going to hire me.
Yeah, no.
Which is the exact wrong thing. Anyone listening out there, don't ever do that.
Don't ever do that.
Don't ever do that. What you want to do, just for aspiring writers, write a pilot.
Of something else. Yeah.
Well, it's okay to write a spec for a show that everybody knows. And that was kind of okay to do back then when I was writing specs. And there were only 20 shows.
Like, right.
I mean, I didn't start in the 50s.
Right.
Like 10 years ago, there weren't that many shows.
It was
like, and people would watch it, so you'd know. So writers would write a spec for I wrote a spec for Two and a Half Men.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who read it had seen Two and a Half Men and understood the characters and understood the voice of the show.
Sure.
But now, you'll write for a show no one's ever heard of or no one's ever seen. So that's probably not the best idea to write a spec for a show, unless maybe you're doing Modern Family because everybody's seen that show.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, write a pilot and make it good and get some good feedback and rewrite it and try and do something with it.
I mean, my experience in television from the directing standpoint is that it is a very much of a club. Because it is a good job. If you get on a show and if you get on a good show, even if you do, as a director at least, even if you do 5-6 episodes a year, you're good. Like financially, you're doing very well.
And the residuals too. Yeah, you're doing good.
You're doing good, right? So It's so difficult to break in. I'm assuming that's similar to the writers, because do all the writers get residuals off of everything, or how does that work?
Writers get residuals on the shows that they write, and I don't know. I know the creator gets residuals
on everything.
On everything, but I don't know what other levels or how that works. I think only if you have points in the show,
sure.
you get that. But yeah, for writers, it's the episodes you write, and if it airs again in prime time, you get half your script fee, which is fantastic. And then you could get, I mean, if you're a syndicated show, you could get a big check just because they made a big syndication deal. So,
like the guys from Friends and Seinfeld, Friends and Seinfeld are doing okay.
Yeah.
All those writers in that writer's room, they did all right.
Yeah. I mean, even like I knew a writer that worked on the Cleveland show, and he was like, he said to me, here, I want to show you something. He's like, I know you're getting your first scripts, but I want to show you what it could be. Mm-hmm. And he kind of showed his Writers Guild residuals, and they were fantastic.
From the Cleveland show, the canceled Cleveland show.
From the Cleveland show and like some other shows. But yeah, I mean, like if a show goes into syndication, not even like a super successful show, it could be pretty good. It's a nice career. And the Writers Guild benefits when you retire, great too. So
can I ask you a question? And I'm going to be that guy. What is the range of money that you get off of residual, so people have understanding?
Oh, I'm not the right person to ask.
Okay.
Just because I've written three,
and those checks haven't come in yet.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, one was a syndicated show. Hot in Cleveland was a syndicated show,
yeah.
And that has not been as good as you want it to be.
Right.
But figure, I'll just throw out numbers.
Sure.
And these could be totally
wrong.
Pull
them right out of the air.
So let's say on a half hour network show, mm-hmm. You get paid if you write it, if it's, story by written by you, mm-hmm. you've written the script, it's your name only. That for a half hour network, that's $26,000.
Not bad.
If it gets rerun in prime time, you get half that fee. So nice. You get $13,000.
Okay.
Okay. So there.
That's good right there. You're doing really good.
You're doing good. If it airs again in prime time, it's probably half that. So maybe it's like $6,500 or something.
Sure. Okay.
And then your guess is as good as mine.
On syndication.
On syndication, yeah. I mean, you could get. I mean. No one – like I've gotten a syndication check for Hot in Cleveland, and I wrote – it was a cable show, and I wrote half the episode. Mm-hmm. And the syndication check was like not even half of what the original fee was. So it wasn't – I felt like that check should have been more, right? I mean,
I always feel checks should be more, but that's just me. Anytime I get a check, I'm like, this check should be for more. I mean, well, I don't want to be the crass guy asking about money, but it was just, it's a lot of people out there who just don't even understand what people make. And a lot of this information you could just find through Writers Guild. Writers Guild has all this stuff.
Yeah. If you go online and do WGA schedule of minimums, mm-hmm. it's right there. You can find out everything that you'll make for TV and for features too. Mm-hmm. But I don't even think that's not even the real money is in the script. I mean, it's great money. It's like bonus money. Mm-hmm. If you're producer level or co-EP.
Oh, forget
it. Forget it. But even if you're story editor. So again, you can look at this schedule of minimums. But if you're a TV writer or a network show, if you're a staff writer, it's something like $3,000+ a week. If you're a story editor, it could be $5,000-$6,000. So that's the real money. If you can get on some of these shows, writers make a good living. I have not been a staff writer or a story editor or anything on a show, so I don't have that experience.
Sure.
But that's the money.
But wait, so you get paid to be there, and then you also get paid per episode that you write?
Yes.
That's just insanity.
However, if you're a staff writer, mm-hmm. and they're just never going to change this, you don't get a script fee, mm-hmm. which is insane. I think just nobody, the people that are fighting just don't seem to care because they're so upper level. But yeah, so for example, if as a script coordinator, let's say you write a you got a freelance episode, you get paid $26,000 for the script.
Right.
If you're a staff writer on the show that's making $3,000 plus a week and you get a script, you don't get that script fee. You get residuals, but not script fee. And it's for, I don't know why, but it's still around. And no one seems to ever want to fight for that. It's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yep.
So with all of this, now you've told us all this kind of work that you've done over the course of your career. You've then decided to jump into the technology game and invented an app called Scriptation. Yeah. To fulfill a need that is desperately needed in the world of film and television. Can you talk a little bit about Scriptation?
Yeah. So being a script coordinator, I was the one responsible for sending out scripts and script revisions. And I come from the TV world. So I was working on this. It was a pilot. We had it was a weird production schedule. We had 10 days from the table read to when we started shooting. And every single night we were putting out a full 50-page script to 100-plus people. So I get the script together, give it to the PA. They make copies, hand it out to people. People make notes on them. The next day, same process all over again. People are rewriting their notes on the new drafts, and they're dumping the old draft in the trash or hopefully the recycle bin. And that's a crazy process that we've been doing for years. And at that time, everyone on the show, at least in the writer's office, was feeling this is an incredible waste of paper. And I was thinking that too. And not only is it a waste of paper, but productivity.
Sure.
Where you get one draft, you make all your notes, whatever department you're in. If you're a writer, if you're a set decorator, if you're in sound, if you're a director, you make a lot of notes if you're a director. Same thing with a DP. And you're making all of these notes on a script that is going to be obsolete in 24 hours. So I knew that we could annotate on a tablet. So people had iPads at the time and iPhones, and you could use Adobe, right, to annotate a PDF document. But the real problem was once you annotate the draft, so let's say you have a table draft of a script, and then you get your production draft, how can you move all of your notes and annotations from the table draft into the production draft? And that was the problem that we were trying to solve. And I hired a developer. I said, can you do this? And he said, I think so. And that's what kind of launched Scriptation. We figured out this problem, after 2 or 3 years. It took us a while to figure out how to transfer notes from a draft to a new draft and do so intelligently, where we could tell you what changed. And if you handwrite a note that's on the top of page 3 and now is on the bottom of page 2, we can move that handwritten note in that same spot. So, that's how we kind of came up with it. And, we put it in the App Store and it's been pretty successful. And we've had directors that tell us it saves them 4 to 5 hours a week.
That's a lot.
And that's 4 to 5 hours in BS work that they don't. Because when you're directing, you want to spend your time recopying notes and figuring out what changed, or you want to see how it's going to look and get the right performances and set up for the shot.
Right.
So that's the time that we're saving. And it's been really great that not only have people on the crew been able to use it, but also agents and managers and studio executives are using it too, because they've got a ton of scripts, and instead of carrying around a giant binder, they've got a tablet.
Right, of course. It's insane. When I'm directing myself, I have to carry around this huge binder full of, and I try to put my notes in, and it's such a pain in the butt. And I was like, this is such an old-fashioned way of doing things in today's world. But now your Scriptation has alleviated that pain.
Well, on your next production, you're going to need to use it.
Obviously. I know somebody in the company, so hopefully I'll be able to get it. So how much does it cost? Where can people get it?
Well, I kind of have an announcement to share about that. Mm-hmm. So we Scriptation for the past almost 2 years has been in the iOS App Store, that you can get an iPad and iPhone for $9.99. And what you get with that is you get annotation. You also get note transferring. You get another feature called actor highlighting, which is useful for actors at table reads, because instead of manually highlighting all their lines, they tap a button and boom, all their lines are highlighted.
Genius.
Also useful for sound mixers, which we found out. I didn't know. I built it for actors, and then sound mixers say, hey, we highlight lines too. Can you do X, Y, and Z? So, so Scriptation has been in the store for $9.99, and you get all those features and a couple other things. We're going to make that free.
What?
Yeah. So the core Scriptation core of Scriptation, you're actually going to be able to get for free and use as much as you want with as many scripts as you want, and transfer notes as many times as you like. No limit on it.
Okay. And then what's the rub? You have to be a business. So what's the rub?
You mean it's too good to be free?
It sounds too good to be true. Should I just buy real estate with no money down?
So what we will be offering is we're going to be offering Scriptation Pro, which is going to include cloud storage, and we'll be able to actually sync all of your Scriptation metadata, actor highlights, note transferring deletions, etc., in the cloud. You can access it device to device. We also have our document editor, which lets you add facing pages to write notes. And actually, in the note transfer, this is really cool. So if you're a director and you're at a table read and you make all of your notes and you insert shots and diagrams and then you get a shooting draft, you can actually transfer all of those inserted pages into the new draft as well. The way the algorithm works is it actually finds the like page and then moves that page there. So you really don't have to do any work transferring notes.
That's amazing.
And we're also offering a reader mode for the iPhone, where sometimes it's hard to read scripts on your iPhone as a PDF, and we're going to make that easier for you. That's actually being included in the free version, but that's going to be launched with Scriptation Pro. And then we've got a couple of other features that we're launching with Pro there. That's
awesome.
The rub.
That is the rub, and a good rub it is, sir. Yes. And then where can people find the app on the App Store?
Sure. Yeah, you can go to the App Store, search for Scriptation. It'll be there. You can also go to the Windows Store and get Scriptation. It's available on any sort of Windows device that you have.
Fantastic, man. And now I'm going to ask you a few questions that I ask all of my guests. What advice would you give a screenwriter wanting to break into the business today?
Right.
Fair enough. Next. No, I'm joking. Yes.
I'll elaborate a little, but it's really simple. If you want to be a writer, write. And if you have no outside responsibilities, like you're a single guy living in a city, write, because maybe you'll get a girlfriend. Maybe you'll get married. Maybe you'll start a family. Maybe you'll have bills you'll have to pay. And then you won't be able to do that anymore.
Yep.
So if you can do it, write as much as you can. Write, rewrite. Find a group of friends who don't send your script to everyone to get notes and then trying to appease everybody. Find a group of people that you trust. You trust their opinion, you trust their taste. Three people, four max. Send that to them, get their thoughts, become a better writer with that.
Now, can you tell me what book had the biggest impact on your life or career?
You ask that to everybody?
Everybody.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
Dr. Seuss.
Let's see. The New York Times crossword. I think doing crosswords makes you a smarter person.
Fair enough.
And I'd recommend everybody to you don't have to get the New York Times to do it. You can actually, they have a crossword app in the App Store. So get New York Times crosswords. Start with Monday. Be really upset that you can't get the easy ones, but eventually you will.
Fantastic. All right. Now, what lesson took you the longest to learn, whether in the film business or in life?
Oh, man. There are so many things I have learned. I've been so naive in this industry.
But what took you the longest to learn?
Patience, probably.
Yeah, that's a very popular answer. That's my answer, too.
No, it's true, though.
It is.
You can't do everything at once. plans are going to, I mean, you know, I've learned this a lot with scriptation too, but you got to be able to pivot whether in a company or in life. Mm-hmm. If things like at the, like patience, but at the same time, be willing to change what you're doing. I don't know, all about, you know, be mindful of things and have a good attitude. These are like, what am I saying right now? But all of these things are, yeah. I mean, I'll go to yoga, yes, find your inner self.
Meditate. You know,
meditate. Yeah, do all of those things. You can't do everything for everybody. You can't do everything at once.
Sure.
Do what you want to do. Do what you know is right. And hope that you succeed and have faith that you will.
And what are three of your favorite films of all time?
This is going to sound so cliche.
Go for it. It's okay.
Because it's so of my time.
I know.
Like when I was in college, so that's why it's going to sound cliche.
Sure.
Office Space.
Now, I love that movie. I really, really – it's a brilliant piece of cinema. It really is.
It really is. It is so perfect in almost every way.
It's so ahead of its time.
It's so ahead of its time. It's just so – Mike Judge is just so brilliant. That movie I could watch over and over again.
And had that other one he did, Idiocracy or
– Oh, Idiocracy.
Idiocracy. Oh, my God.
Oh, you mean What's Happening Right Now?
Exactly, like where we are in the world right now. It was – the writer – I saw the writer or I read the writer. Like he goes, when I wrote this, I never thought that this would actually happen.
Yep.
It is scary. Scary. Yep. That's a frightening movie to watch now.
Well, we're watching it right now. We're all watching it. The world watches this movie. Another movie, just because I can't think of my favorite, that I can just put on and watch is Midnight in Paris. I love wish fulfillment movies. I wish more movies were like that because that's what I want to go to the cinema for.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something. You know, it's just comfort food for me to watch that movie. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid growing up, Superman.
The original Superman is so good.
Yeah. It's good.
Donner created – without Donner, there is no Avengers.
Agreed.
I mean
100%.
No Batman. There's no Batman. There's nothing without Donner setting up the entire genre. He's the first one to do the genre in the theatrical environment.
Oh, and making it feel real. Everything. I mean, Nolan. I mean, that's sort of what Chris Nolan did with the Batman movies, is make it feel like this could happen.
Right.
And it just make it feel grounded. You know, Chris Nolan took it to the next level. Batman Begins. That's up there. One of my favorite movies. But yeah, Superman, man, that as a kid and today, Superman 1 and 2, I should say.
Yeah, those two together are – I look at them –
talk about 3 or holy God 4.
Let's not go there. Though I actually was a kid when 3 came out and I loved 3 when I was like, you know, 10.
So did I.
You know, like Richard Pryor.
When I was – when I loved 4 – well, maybe I didn't even love 4 when I was 10. No, actually, I liked it then.
I was already a teenager by that time and I could go, this is not right. There's something weird.
Don't like that
here.
Guy's fingernails.
Why can you cut Superman's hair? This makes no sense. I don't understand what you're doing. did you ever see the Donner cut of Superman 2?
I did, yeah.
It's the best.
I think I have that DVD or maybe illegally downloaded it.
What? It's amazing. No, but it's amazing.
This was it came out like 10 years ago, something like that, right?
Not that old. Probably within the last 10 years it came out. But the Donner cut was so much better. They got rid of all that funky throwing the Superman signal that turned into some Saran wrap.
Oh, that was crazy.
Like, where did that come from? Like, Superman can't do that.
Yeah, how do you even think of that?
That's when they lost. They ran off the rails with that one. But when you go back to the Donner cut, you're like, oh, this is what it was supposed to be. We could have had more of this.
Right. Yeah.
If it wasn't for those damn producers, which should be a T-shirt in Hollywood. But anyway. Now, Steve, where can people find you, man?
I'm not really on the social networks. I'm only on it through my scriptation handle. Okay. So, but you can contact me through there. All right. So, at scriptation app on all the on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you want to contact me, then send a message through any of those social media services.
Steve, man, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, man. Thank you so much for dropping some knowledge bombs on the tribe today, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, this was fun. I hope it's useful.
I want to thank Steve again for coming by the show and dropping those knowledge bombs on the tribe today. If you want to get links to anything we talked about in the show, please head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/BPS031. There you'll get links to Scriptation as well as anything else we discussed in the episode. And if you haven't already, please head over to screenwritingpodcast.com and leave us a good review on iTunes. We are a new show, and it would really help us out in the rankings and getting all this great information out to as many screenwriters and filmmakers as humanly possible. I really do appreciate it, guys. And also on a side note, I wanted to let you guys know what we will be bringing to IFH TV in January. We've got season 3 of The Dialogue, which is really, if you have not watched that show yet, guys, please watch it. It has some of the best interviews with some of the biggest screenwriters in Hollywood. And we're also going to be releasing lectures by some major authorities in the screenwriting space. We are just finalizing the negotiations of those writers, but some of them are really, really big. I know we're going to be getting Richard Walter, who is the chairman of the UCLA screenwriting program for 30-odd years, has written many books, and more people of his caliber are going to be on IFH TV as well. So definitely check out all the cool stuff we're going to have. Just head over to www.indiefilmhustle.tv and sign up. And that's it for this episode of the Bulletproof Screenplay Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. This might be the last episode before the end of the year, but definitely before Christmas. So if we don't speak, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, all the holidays. May you have a great holiday season. And when your families come over and drive you nuts and there's all this drama and all this stuff going on with families and friends coming over, take it. Put it into your scripts. Put it into your stories. Be honest. Be truthful with where you're coming from as a writer. And I promise you, it will lead you to places you don't even see right now. So, as always, keep on writing no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Inside the Screenwriter's Mind at screenwritersmind.com.